You're listening to episode 324 of Women Worldwide. We're all on a journey, but what about the journey to self-love and acceptance? I've got a guest today who's back on the show. She has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Wherever you are in this great big world, we are so happy that you're tuning in. Thank you for being here. And thank you for always sharing the shows and sharing how you're doing, how you're feeling, and what's going on in your world. We always want to bring the experts that can help and share insights for maybe some of your challenges. Well, today we certainly have a treat because we have an alum coming back on Women Worldwide. We're going to be talking about the journey to self-love and acceptance, which is so important for all of us. Emily Rapp Black is joining us today. Now, as you may remember, Emily and I had a really good discussion about resilience. She is the author of several books, but today we're going to talk about her brand new book, Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg. Emily has also written Poster Child, The Still Point of the Turning World, and Sanctuary. But Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg is the focus of this discussion. And I also want to mention that Emily is a professor and associate professor at University of California at Riverside. She teaches creative writing. Well, I've said enough. Emily, welcome back to Women Worldwide.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Oh, lucky are we. Well, so I line this up all about the journey to self-love and acceptance. And let's just, you've been so busy writing. My goodness. Just want to know, tell us why you wrote Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg.
It kind of by accident, which is something that writers often say, and I find really annoying, but it's actually true. I had gone to see, I've had this sort of lifelong interest in her work and her life, and sort of there's a history of that, which I wasn't sure I would write about. And then when I went to the Casa Azul, which is her home where she worked and in Mexico City, I had a kind of, I say to my students always, like, if you have this bodily reaction to something and you're not sure what it is and it scares you, and that's probably something you need to write about. I wasn't sure what it was. So when I went there, I was pregnant with my daughter. My son had recently died. It was the first time I'd ever seen her prosthetic limbs and her back braces and her lifted shoes, which yeah. I have experience with all of those things, obviously, as I've had an artificial leg since I was four. I kind of had that weird, whole body explosive feeling. And so I was talking to my friend and business partner about it, the writer Gina Frangello, and she's like, I think you should write an angry death essay. I was like, yeah. So I did. We were in Mexico teaching, and I went back to my hotel room, and I just pounded out this angry, sad essay. And that became one of the parts of the Frida Kahlo book. It became something more after that, but that was why I was so taken. It was just like, we had just gone to see the room where she had died. Frida Kahlo had died. It had just been unsealed. And then, so I was like, whoa, like a deathbed. I'd just come from a deathbed, my son, and then into this room with all these legs. And I was like, whoa, like it just felt like all the things that were connected somehow and, you know, overwhelming me. And so because I'm a writer and I've always done this, when I feel overwhelmed, I use writing to put a frame around that feeling of chaos as a way of, you know, exercising my agency in a moment of helplessness.
Yeah. This is all so powerful, what you experienced and the way that you put it on paper or digitally. As you were doing the writing, and you said that this one part, this essay, became a part of your entire book. What is it exactly that you wanted readers to take away from the book itself?
I mean, I think a feeling of connection with someone they've never met. And more than that, so if by seeing this connection that I have with this woman I've never met, I have almost nothing in common with apart from, you know, physical, well, actually from operations and pain and having one leg, there's all that. But in terms of her cultural background and her language, like none of that is, I don't share that with her. But I wanted people to feel that they had permission to make a connection with another person who guided them like beyond the grave, essentially. Like, so this is a story about, you know, how powerful art is, essentially. I mean, Frida Kahlo died in 1954. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1974. She was not even 50. I'm getting there. I've always felt this profound connection with her and her art and her and what's written. And I've always not liked or I've been resisted what's written about her. So I don't know. I just think people can have these guides, these artistic guides, and that's what art is for. Like Frida Kahlo has been dead for a long time, but her art is still around and people are still having an experience of it. And that to me is like why art matters. You know, it's powerful. It brings people together across time and history.
That is amazing. Yes, I agree. Art does matter. It can be powerful. It's subjective to each and every one of us. Do you see anything in terms of, so you make this connection, you have these powerful feelings. What did she teach you something about the either a self-love or acceptance? Did she help you along your journey in any way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like self-love is a very tricky concept, and I feel like it's a fluctuating feeling, and that sometimes we think of it as, oh, you get to a point and you love yourself and it's all over and that's it. You never think about it again. But I don't like any kind of love. It's not the same all the time. And I think one of the things that I wanted to communicate in this book is that it's great. Body positivity movement is awesome. Self-love is certainly a goal. But you don't always have to feel it all the time. Like, otherwise you feel like you failed at one more thing. Like, it can be a process and it can repeat itself all the time. And I definitely feel like she, you know, she went through a lot of surgeries. She had a lot of physical pain, which I can relate to. Not in this, you know, in some similar ways and some dissimilar ways, because pain is individual. But I also learned, like, people would always say when I would read these really sort of convoluted art historical records of her work, and I was like, I have no idea what you're saying, that, you know, pain was her muse. And I was just like, that's not true. Like, pain is not a muse. It's just pain. And in another book, they'd say, oh, she's narcissistic because she paints herself. And what I came to the conclusion that she does that in order to maintain a sense of privacy. And what I mean is, people have all kinds, they love to talk about her. Like, there's Freedomania, Freedolatry, like all these things. And the art historians are very sometimes awed when they are speaking about her work and her life and the connection between the two. And I just know for myself, like, I write memoir now, maybe I wasn't doing this consciously at the beginning, to maintain a sense of privacy. Because if you have a body that people have been commenting on and prodding and poking your whole life, like, people are already putting a narrative on you. And if you write about your own life, then you're like, here's what you get. And that's it. Bye. Like, you know, it's like, you know.
Yeah, you're telling your own story, too. Mm-hmm. You're setting, I don't want to say you're setting the record straight, but frankly, you are shaping what is really going on for more people to, of course, weigh in on. That's really interesting. You said the process, sort of the self-love, the acceptance, it repeats itself, and you don't always, it's a feeling, and you don't always feel that way. So what can you say to people who fall off in by way of process and don't have that feeling of love? Is there something, a way to think? Is there a way to do something to get back to the journey?
Well, I think traditionally, at least in this culture, you know, women are encouraged to do things like, I don't know, fast or go on a diet or try some new like weird power shake or something. I wouldn't recommend that. I think, or, you know, how to get a better butt. Like, don't buy that magazine. I think find somebody in history that you relate to in some way, like an artist, a writer. I mean, and find a connection in those stories that resonates with you. And you'll probably find somebody who, there'll be somebody, because that's what art does, you know, art that stays. I mean, Frida Kahlo's journals are so much like my own journals, except, you know, obviously I don't speak Spanish, but in the translation, like some of the things she talks about and the emotional cycles that she goes through connected to her pain and her body are very similar to things that I wrote at certain points in my life. And it's really important to be recognized, to feel represented in some sense in the world when you don't have a lot of models that would reflect that back to you.
Absolutely. Did you find Frida on your own, or did somebody share Frida with you? So what was that initial? I know you said that you recently went, you were born at a different time. She was born at a different time. You weren't aware of her. Where did the awareness happen?
So I think this is how I remember it. I think this is how it happened. Because I mean, like, obviously memory is not quite, you know, it's rock solid, but my brother had a girlfriend that studied art, and she brought a book back with her at some point. And I looked at it and I was like, what? I loved it. I thought it was, I can't draw. Like I've never been someone who did any kind of visual art. So it wasn't like I was aware of artists. I was like studying religion and classics and, you know, Greeks. So that was kind of out of the picture. And I was like, this is so interesting. And then I started to look into her, which involved going to the library. I know. And looking at microfiche, you know, and like, or, you know, like research with the little catalog. And so I started doing that, and I just kind of fell down this rabbit hole. And there's a lot about her, it turns out, even more now. But this was before she was on socks and tote bags. This is like when she was still, you know, very popular sort of artistic figure. And then I tried to take an art class, and that was a total disaster because I can't draw. And the artist, the teacher was like, why don't you write about her? Looking at my sad, like, paintings of apples. She's like, this is not good. So that's what I was started to do. I didn't really write about her, but I thought about her a lot, I guess. Yeah. So it's sort of and I read everything that came out about every book that was written about her, every novel, like everything that ever came out with her name in it that was some kind of creative writing I read.
You're really drawn to her.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Now she has two kids books, and not she doesn't have two kids books, but there's two kids books about her that are really
about her. That's really cool. So every book, I feel like as an author, every book you learn something about yourself. Mm-hmm. So as you were writing this book, or even upon it being finished and published, what did you learn that you didn't already know about yourself?
That's a great question. I mean, it goes to the point of no surprise for the writer, no surprise for the reader. Like, that's an important sort of artistic principle that I think is very true. I mean, I guess I understood a lot of where some of my anger came from and some of my self-loathing, I suppose, and like what the root of it was, and knowing the root, how to pull it out a little bit. And also, right. I also think it really, I mean, I've always considered myself a feminist, you know, like that's not a word that I shy away from, but it solidified to me this kind of notion that we live in a system in which women are given particular choices. And the only way to really avoid going into a box that someone makes for you is to sort of sit on it. So she really did that. And I think she did it pretty publicly, which I also admire. Like, so yeah, I mean, I guess I realized how much I had to say about her, to be honest. Like, I didn't think I'd ever write a book about her. I really didn't. No. Partly because I'm not an art historian. I know nothing about art. So yeah, I guess it was like, I was surprised at how much the conclusion of the book is about the power of art and about art, the way that I was drawn to her. But more than that, it's about how art stays when everything else is gone. You know,
that is something that we can rely on. Do you think, you said sit on a box? That's really interesting. That's an interesting phrase. Is this a character trait that you identify with? If there were, I know you're different, but is that one of the traits that you feel like she had the ability to do that and you can do that as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think she had an element of privilege in terms of of a class. Like, she had money, she had status. She was married to a famous painter, Diego Rivera. So she used that power in her time, in her place. You know, she was radical in many ways. And of course she had the economic supports to do that. She had privilege, she had a position of privilege in many ways. And I feel like, you know, a white, you know, middle-aged woman who's a writer is a pretty rarefied existence in many ways. So, you know, I think the box thing, I think it's more like, you know, some people, well, here's what I really think.
Tell us what you really think, Emily.
The stories that we really probably most need to hear about people suffering, we never will, because they were murdered or they didn't have the means or where they were completely silenced by someone in some way. So I feel like if you do have a story that people like to frame in a certain way and then make larger conclusions about women or people with disabilities, then you kind of have a responsibility, if you're a writer, to write a new story and say, here's what I experienced. You can believe it or not, but like, this is my story. Like, so you were wrong, like, or you were right, but it doesn't matter because I've told you now how it is.
Yeah. That is so important. I'm glad you said that. Which leads into something else that I wanted to ask you, you know, sharing experiences, the story, you write about it, whether somebody believes it or not, you're still putting it out there. A lot of people in my circle, you know, in communications, say everybody has a story or a book in them. You are an associate professor, you teach creative writing, you are an author. Do you think that everybody has a story and there is a book within everyone? Kind of a hard question, but...
No. I mean, I do think everyone has at least one book in them. It's just that you really have to want to write it, because like, no one cares if you do. You know, people are like, oh, you know, I get this question asked all the time, and it's fair because I have it myself. It's like, who's going to want to read this? Like, should I write this? And it's like, well, no, you have to really be into it for the labor of doing it. And you have to like at least a little bit enjoy yourself. Right. But it's not easy to write a book. It's also not the hardest thing in the world. If you want to do it, there's ways to do it for sure. But it's not something you have to do, but certainly you could do.
That's good to know. And do you think that there are a lot of people who want to write books, but maybe they're not the trained writer, or they've never written anything beyond, let's say, a blog post or a letter,
right?
Or they're journaling. Should people seek some kind of training or classes or ways to enhance their writing?
I do think that getting into a class is really important, like finding a community. I mean, I teach a lot, and I think one of the things in the most successful classes that I teach, there's a sense of community built that extends beyond the boundaries of the class period, right? And people get to know each other and they share their work, and community really does foster creativity. So I would say that there's so many classes you can take, right? You can work with somebody privately, you can take a class, but more than anything, just read a lot, because when you read, you learn what people do. I mean, you sort of absorb it without analysis. Yeah.
Yeah. I love reading all different kinds of books. Yeah. I mean, I just read a book on Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, wow.
Alice Toward None by Stephen Oates. It was so good, but it was so different than some of my motivational, inspirational books versus some of my business books. You know, I'm reading I think it's the Pivot to Digital or the Digital Pivot. They're all so different, but as you read them, different styles, ways of storytelling come through.
Yes.
So, reading helps so much. Do you, as a writer, just maybe quickly, what do you find is the best part of writing memoirs? And maybe what's challenging? Is there anything still challenging to you as a writer after all of your books?
Yeah, the best thing is being done. Or actually being done with the book, but also just having a good writing day where you feel like you've made a breakthrough, even if the next day you're like, that feels really good. It feels really purposeful and meaningful. The hard thing is, I think sometimes memoir is people confuse the writer with the I in the book. And of course they're related, but it's also a fabrication. It's a facsimile of a person. It's a character that isn't objectively true. And so that sometimes is a challenge, just in terms of interaction, although I haven't interacted with any human people for a while. So that's not been an issue. But I think too, writing memoir is kind of like writing from the secret self. It's like, you don't really get good memoir unless you're ready to look ridiculous or bad, quote, bad or weird. Like, you don't get there. And that's hard sometimes, to put yourself in a position of claiming something that is, a little bit less ordered than you might want.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, it's vulnerable. Yeah.
Really vulnerable.
You feel really vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah, because now it's not just, it almost feels like you're opening up your diary to everyone, saying, here, take a look. When you were growing up, you're protecting your diary under lock and key, and please don't look at it. That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Well, I can hardly believe our time always flies by.
It does.
Maybe you could just give some parting advice to the Women Worldwide audience out there about sharing their stories and being vulnerable, if anything.
Mm-hmm. I would say, you control your narrative to some degree. You don't control what happens to you, but you do control the way you put it out into the world. And if you want to do it, then do it. Like, you're the only person that really has to care. That you have to love, you have to do it for the sake of the work and for the belief in this, that the story is important, not for any other reason, really.
That's great advice. Well, where can people find out more about you and Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg?
You can go, let's see. My website is just my name, Emily Ratblack, @gmail.com. And then I also do a lot of classes and coaching with my business partner, Gina Frangello, and our business is called Circe Consulting, after the goddess. So we are, we're kind of a new woman run business. Sort of laughable to see two writers try to figure out business. But yeah, so those are the two places that you can find out what's going on.
Terrific. Well, congratulations on the book, Frida Kahlo and My Left Leg. I hope everybody picks up a copy. And thank you so much for just sharing your journey and being so transparent and open about the writing process and everything that you've been through. You are an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deirdre.
You're welcome. And thank you to all of you for tuning in to Women Worldwide. And as I always say, please keep the conversations going, the feedback coming. You know where to find me. I'm on Twitter @DeepBreckenridge. You can always connect with me on LinkedIn. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.